Greetings, greetings, and welcome to the show. This is Wrong Place, Right Crime. I am your host, Frank Zaffiro, and we are in the middle of a 12-episode mini-series retrospective celebrating a grifter's song. Now, if you're just stumbling onto this for the first time, what is a grifter's song? This is a serial novella anthology that I created and edited for Down and Out Books. It follows a pair of grifters, Sam and Rachel, who are devoted to each other and to the con, but pretty much everything else is up for grabs in the entire world. It is published by Down and Out Books. You can find out more about Down and Out Books at their website, downandoutbooks.com. All one word on the down and out. And this series features novella length stories, and they vary widely depending on the author. And when I say depending on the author, that's because every episode is written by a different author, set in a different location. The con is a different con. The point of view varies. The style of writing varies, but the characters are consistent. 35 episodes, 30 different writers, and it is all coming to an end on October 1st, 2023, with episode 35, Into the Dying Sun. Now, on this episode, we are going to take a look at number 18, Rocky Mountain Lie by Michael Poole, number 19, Open Up Your Heart by Carmen Jaramillo, and number 20, Ride Like Hell by S.A. Cosby. You can go back and listen to the previous episodes to hear about the first 17 books. The format is I give a little information about the book, maybe a behind-the-scenes story if it applies, and then we hear from the author themselves and get some insight into what their experience was like and their thoughts on the story. Incidentally, many of these interviews took place at the BoucherCon Mystery Conference right there on the floor or even in the bar. And so, you know, you'll hear some background on those. But that was an easy way to get a bunch of interviews in a short period of time and be able to stand next to the person I was talking to, which was really nice. All right, so let's start with number 18, Rocky Mountain Lie, which was written by Michael Poole. Now, Michael agreed to send in some written answers to a few questions that I gave to each of the authors, but he is an incredibly busy guy, and at the time of this recording, hadn't managed to get those back to me yet, so I don't have any comments from him that are recent. I will tell you that he was on episode 40 of Wrong Place, Right Crime. And at that time, we did talk about Rocky Mountain Lie in great detail, so you can pop over there if you're interested. We also talk about his other work, the fact that he is a private investigator. He writes about a PI named Rick Malone, and he brings this PI into Sam and Rachel's world. So it's a different approach than many of the authors have taken, in that much like Eric Prewitt placed Sam and Rachel in his environment that he writes about, Michael brought them into the world of Rick Malone. Now, if you're keeping track, the expanded universe of Sam and Rachel is pretty broad. So, I mean, they're also part of River City based on a piece of a poetry that was included in one of the stories. So, you know, don't try to map that out. We might run into some paradoxes that destroy the, you know, time-space continuum. But that's okay, because it's really interesting to see how these authors who have established characters or established locations really work the formula of Sam and Rachel and A Grifter Song into that world. So like I mentioned, Michael is a private investigator. So anytime somebody is writing about the profession that they know about, you know that by and large, it's going to be 100% accurate. Now, of course, you're going to ramp things up. You're going to tweak things a little bit to keep things interesting. You know, police procedurals do this all the time. I can speak firsthand to that. You know, you put enough detail in so that it's interesting, but if you go too far, it becomes a textbook, and nobody wants to read that unless they're getting college credit for it. And so Michael brings that authenticity to the Rick Malone character. Now, the setting is Vail, Colorado. Sam and Rachel are trying to con a sex-crazed business tycoon named Dan Croft. They're trying to get him to invest in their scam business, which is a marijuana edibles business. Now, at the time that this was written, marijuana had been legalized in Colorado for a little while, but it was still a relatively recent event. I mean, Colorado was, I believe, the first state, so it wasn't brand new, but it was still pretty up new. And I know that in California, they were exploring some of the issues that came up with this, banking issues and so forth. The same thing was happening in Washington and Oregon, which actually beat California to the punch in their legalization journey. And so it was a very timely topic. And of course, you know, the cover for this is green with the Rocky Mountains in the background, and in the foreground, what else but a marijuana leaf? So, so that ought to draw a pretty good picture of what is going on. What do I like about this particular episode? I think I already told you that I really liked how he brought his world of Rick Malone into a grifter song and didn't sacrifice the important elements of either one. He also really, as many of the authors have done, brought that sense of place into the foreground. So you knew you were in Vail, Colorado. You just weren't somewhere that happened to have legal marijuana. It's one thing if I've never been there and I feel like I'm there. It's another thing if I know what it's like there and you make me feel like I'm there. So kudos to Michael Poole for that. I can definitely recommend episode 18 of A Grifter Song, A Rocky Mountain Lie by Michael Poole. Check it out. And like I said, if you're interested in hearing more about it, episode 40 of A Wrong Place, Right Crime is dedicated strictly to Michael Poole. Let's move on to episode 19, Open Up Your Heart by Carmen Yarmio. Now, this one takes place in both Chicago and in a little roadside restaurant just over the Wisconsin border. The foreground item on the cover here is a sign for Kenosha, a population sign there, like when you enter the city. Now, Carmen took an approach that not a lot of the authors have done. Several have, but not the majority by any means. And she focused more on a different character than Sam and Rachel. And so the POV was from Genevieve Davidson, who is a con artist in her own right. And so she has interactions with Sam and Rachel, eventually bringing them in to a con that she has started. This is one of the few episodes that delves a little bit into politics, in this case, politics at the city level, but we're talking about a large city like Chicago, so it's pretty high politics there. There are a couple of others yet to come that delve into politics. But what I liked about this episode the most, aside from the almost lyrical way that Carmen writes, is that it did focus on Genevieve. It focused on her vulnerabilities and her aspirations and her perceptions. And so in addition to just being a cool story in that regard, it gives the reader a view of Sam and Rachel that Sam and Rachel don't necessarily have of themselves. Of course, they're chameleons anyway, but I think you know what I mean. So that's all I want to say about the story. I think I'll let her talk about it a little bit more. And let's just turn to Carmen and hear her thoughts on Open Up Your Heart, episode 19 of A Grifter Song. Well, hey, Carmen, I'm going to ask you what I've been asking everybody right out of the chute. And that is, when you were asked to join the series, A Grifter Song, what made you say yes?
Well, like, first was that I just thought it sounded like a really cool challenge to be able to, like, work within an existing series and an existing universe. But also probably as much of that as that, I'd, like, heard of the series before and knew of some of the authors that had written for it before. So I was extremely flattered and was just like, oh, you want me in the series with all these extremely talented writers? Like, yes, absolutely, I'll do it. So that was, yeah, that was a big part of it. It was just, like, I was extremely flattered by it.
Well, with this story, was it something that you came up with specifically for Grifter's Song, or was it something that had been brewing in your head for a while and this just made for a good landing pad?
A little bit. at some point, several months before I was invited, I had this idea, like, just for a scene where that would start off a plot where two old friends are listening to a Buck Owens song somewhere, like in a bar or something, where one of them is way into the music and the other one is just looking at their friend and going, just like, you are so embarrassing that you like this music. What is wrong with you? And that would kind of set off this tone of them having grown apart as friends. And then also one of them is very unafraid to be very sincere and very open with people. And the other one is kind of closed off and like kind of like embarrassed or like even kind of like afraid and unwilling to be very open and sincere with people. I didn't develop it at the time, but then when you invited me and I got really excited about it, I was thinking of like different ways that I would approach it. And the idea of, I got kind of stuck on this idea of sincerity, of the Sam and Rachel living this this life of scamming and false identity and how hard it is to be open and honest with people and form bonds in that kind of life. So I went then ended up like remembering this idea that I'd had a few months before, and then those two characters became Marina, and then Genevieve was the second person. And then I had this, like, so then I was able to set Genevieve off against, you know, two people who are not open with anybody except for each other. They have that that kind of close relationship.
You went a route that not all of the authors did, and that is to tell the story, or at least a portion of the story, through the eyes of a third party rather than Sam and Rachel. But you had to play within a certain set of rules to do so, right? Like everybody, yeah. There are foul lines that you had to stay inside of. How was your reaction to that?
When I got started, I was a little bit worried about that, because in the past I'd had trouble like sticking to, like, if I was assigned a prompt, it was fine. But if I would, like, when I would start, the way I would often start working on a story is I'd get like one idea, like one little thing, and then I'd build off from that. And what would happen a lot of the time is that the idea would develop and I would take it in some other direction and then would just like divest itself completely from the original idea that I'd had. So I was a little worried that I was going to start running into trouble here. The story was just going to like run away from Sam and Rachel completely. But luckily that didn't really become much of a problem. I don't know if it was like by that point I had become a more disciplined writer and was able to work within it. But I think a lot of it was just that you gave us a lot of freedom within that framework. I was a little bit worried with the climax, because I have the climax that Sam and Rachel don't even like appear in it. They're referenced in it at the very end in an important way thematically, but they're not actually there. And I was a little worried that like this wouldn't work, that I would turn that in, you'd be just like, Sam and Rachel aren't in the ending, this is gonna work. But you allowed this kind of thing to all of the authors. Yeah, it wasn't a problem for the story that they, for the series, that they appear only as like kind of ghosts in the ending. So.
Yeah, I wonder if this was a TV series or something, if a TV showrunner would have a hang up like that. But I liked it because much like some of the other episodes, you know, you had a unique story to tell. And so it ended in a very unique way. And that just so happened to not have, you know, on screen Sam and Rachel, but it, you know, was the right ending.
Yeah, I really appreciate that you were able to be flexible with the story. And yeah, kind of like let Sam and Rachel's shadow loom over the ending, but not have them appear in the ending. I was very grateful for that.
Well, you put a lot of effort into Genevieve and the other characters, but you didn't necessarily neglect Sam and Rachel. Was there anything about them that intrigued you or that you really found interesting or wanted to explore?
Yeah, well, what I like about them is that they're survivors. they have such a hard life. I know they kind of chose this life and then kind of didn't, but like that's a very hard life to live. Is exactly what Genevieve starts to realize, especially towards the end, is that like how isolating and exhausting it is to live just from scam to scam all the time and having to. There's some. I think when I was reading some of the other like the earlier episodes in the series, then thinking like, you know, they would come to an end, like, oh, that was a good ending, and then I think like, wow, like what is it like for like now that they're like the scam's done and everybody's going their separate ways and they can't ever see each other again. And so I was thinking just of how this is like a hard and like tiring way to live. What I also is like kind of special about the two of them is that they have this deep-seated trust with each other. So that's and the thing that Genevieve eventually comes to realize is that they at least, like, even though they have to kind of close themselves off to the rest of the world, they're still, this is the way that they work as a team in the scam, but they also have each other to lean on emotionally as they're living this very difficult kind of like hand-to-mouth scam-to-scam existence.
Yeah, I think it's the emotional support they get from the other person certainly matters. And I think both of them try to stay sharp because, you know, the consequences for not doing so don't just impact them. It impacts their partner as well. Was there a favorite part of your story that you just were like, wow, I'm proud of that. I enjoyed writing that.
So I guess this is like a kind, I don't know how much it matters. It's kind of a spoiler, but it's the last scene, I think, is the one that I'm most proud of, which I think I mentioned that briefly, but that was the one that Sam and Rachel aren't even in, which I'm sorry about that. But it was just so much work to stage that scene. I don't think I actually sketched it out, but I kind of had, at least in my head, I had to figure out like the way that this ballroom was laid out so that all these things could happen. So that was a lot of work.
You mentioned you had read some of the other episodes. Any of those stand out as personal favorites?
Yeah. I think a lot of this is because just I'm a fan of S.A. Cosby's work, but his episode that followed mine, Ride Like Hell, might be my favorite. I think the one that preceded me, I also kind of like Michael Poole's Rocky Mountain High.
If you were in charge of writing the ending, how would you end it? Or if you prefer, how do you think it'll end?
I've been thinking about this, and my fear is that they're not going to survive, because as I was saying, I think I like survivors, and I'm like, oh, it'd be a real shame if they didn't, but they're like, I worry about little Vincent always on their tail, because I feel like it's hard for them to like actually eliminate him, because he has like a bunch of buddies in Philadelphia. Like, how are they going to be able to pull that off? I don't know, but like, are they ever going to know peace as long as he's going after them? I feel like they're not going to get that big payout they always wanted. I feel like that, I remember the kind of being part of their motivation, like, we'll pull off the one last job that's going to make us all the money we need to just like disappear to the Bahamas and live like not in luxury, but at least live quietly and not have to worry about stuff. And I'm like, I don't know if I see that big score ever coming for them. I keep like, I want to tell them just leave now, just like, not with the little money we have, just like take off someplace else. Think like, what if they just like ended off in like Nitro City or someplace in Panama, where like all of the like the Australians and the Americans, the Canadians go and hang out, and they're just like bartenders there. They'd blend right in.
Yeah, you make a great point. The time to leave was always at least a book ago for them. So this isn't the only thing you've ever written, obviously. I mean, the whole reason I asked you to join was based on the strengths of some short stories that you wrote on Shotgun Honey. And so what's your most recent release or upcoming release, and where can people find out more about you?
This is going to be a really boring answer because I don't have anything to plug right now. I have like the what came out after a Grifter song was The Eviction of Hope, which is a collection that Colin Conway put together of stories based on people who were being evicted from an apartment complex in, I was about to say Tacoma, but now I think that's wrong and I'm ashamed that I can't remember. But
Spokane.
Oh, sorry. Oh, it's Spokane. Spokane, that's where it was, yeah. So I wrote a piece for that, but since then, I haven't been submitting much. I have been very active. I've been writing a lot. I've been very busy, but that was like kind of, I think I had done, there was a few pieces that I had been like racing to submit. So I took like a short break of like, all right, I'm just going to focus on this long project that I have right now. But that was also about the time that I started to come to terms with being non-binary, which was like a nice revelation for me, but also kind of changed the way that I approached a lot of characters and just like a lot of other things, I guess. And part of this is maybe due to just like the entire world's difficulties with COVID and a million other things that were going on. There were, like, a lot of things that I started to feel like weren't as important as I thought they were. So there were things in this long project that I'm just like, this isn't worth it. I was starting to, the book has dealt very heavily with themes of like success and failure. And after like a year, so suddenly I'm just like, the way that I think of success and failure is completely different. I'm going to have to drop this entire project. And I didn't have much else in the pipeline. So I've just been, spending a lot of time being busy and like experimenting with a lot of stuff. Like there were things that I had in the back of my mind, like, oh, I want to do more stuff with gender, but didn't really know how. And now that I understand some stuff like about, I don't know, like not myself, but like other things a little bit better. Like, oh, now I think I know how I want to approach it. So I've been experimenting with that a little bit more. I haven't been submitting anything in quite a while. I've just been, like doing a lot of stuff for myself.
Where can people find more about you?
Oh, God. I'm not sure. I'm just like really bad. I'm also just bad at self-promotion, if you couldn't tell. So like, where can you find me? Like, I'm not really sure. I think I have stuff like in my Twitter bio, but like, I'm not even sure anymore. I don't know. I'll get back on the horse eventually when the stuff is in better shape, but
Well, Carmen, you wrote a wonderful episode of A Grifter Song, so thank you for doing that.
Thank you for the opportunity. It was great.
And thanks for being part of this podcast retrospective as well.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, thank you, Carmen, for your thoughts on Open Up Your Heart, episode 19 of A Grifter Song. Carmen has written a number of short stories. Some are available online for free. Others are parts of various anthologies. So check that out. Check her work out. And don't forget to read Open Up Your Heart. All right. So let's move on to episode 20, Ride Like Hell by S.A. Cosby. Now, Sean is a writer whose profile has just exploded since the publication of Ride Like Hell. It wasn't Ride Like Hell that caused it to explode. That was Blacktop Wasteland. And there's been a couple others since. Like I mentioned in my interview with him, if you haven't heard of S.A. Cosby and you read mystery or you just read, you're probably not paying attention. I first met Sean in St. Petersburg at a BoucherCon mystery conference. I think his first book, My Darkest Prayer, was either coming out or had just come out. And so he was a new author. And I think that was his first BoucherCon. I might be wrong there, but I'm pretty sure. And I ran into him. I chatted with him for a few minutes. He seemed like a really nice guy, extraordinarily humble and very smart and just a kind person. Funny thing is, later on, I ran into him again and we were talking and he kind of laughed. He said, I thought you were a reader. And so I talked to you, you know, like a reader. And then I realized that you know, you had published so many books. And then we talked about that and, you know, kind of funny. So the next year, BoucherCon was in Dallas. I ran into Sean again. And I was recruiting for, this next season of A Grifter Song. And so I asked him about it. We chatted a bit. He said he'd think about it. He didn't have to think very long. I mean, I think he told me yes later that night or the next day. It was pretty quick. And when I talked to him, he already had an image in his head. And I won't spoil that because he mentions it in the interview that I'm about to play for you. But it's always cool when somebody has, you know, this image or idea right out of the shoot and something that grounds the story and the rest of the story kind of builds around. So this is a story that puts Sam and Rachel in horse country. And they are, as disgusting as it sounds, they are working a scam that involves some thoroughbred horse semen. Now, that sounds rated R and kind of gross, but there's big money in it. And that's why Sam and Rachel are doing this. Now, some of the other people that they are working with and conning aren't necessarily the brightest. In fact, there's a character in there that I've urged Sean to include in other books because he reminds me of Dewey Crow from Justified in that, like, he won't give up and he's always doing something stupid and trying to make money, but messes it up. And it's just a fun character. But anyway, Sam and Rachel trying to swindle some folks when it comes to this prize, baby juice, and things, of course, go bad. And if you've read any S.A. Cosby, you know that they go bad in a spectacularly violent and innovative way. And then he does get that final moment that he saw when we were talking in Dallas. And I'll let him share that with you. You know, once again, what's not to like about this particular episode? A new location, you know, I love horses. And so reading about them is always good. It's a scam that I wouldn't have been able to come up with, in its uniqueness. And of course, Sean brings his own particular skill at writing characters, dialogue, and situations in a way that certainly people all over the country have enjoyed in his other novels. So if you liked Blacktop Wasteland, if you liked Razorblade Tears or All the Sinners Bleed, take a moment and give Ride Like Hell a read. It's pretty fast, pun intended, since it's thoroughbred horses that are the subject. And I caught up with Sean at the BoucherCon conference and interviewed him. So let's hear what he has to say about Ride Like Hell.
Well, hey, Sean, here we are at the floor of VoucherCon, which is making a lot of noise in the background. I hope people can hear us. But I'll ask you the first question I've been asking everybody. When you were asked to join a Grifter Song, what made you say yes?
I just thought the idea was really cool. I'm a fan of like old serials from like the 30s and 40s. I love the idea of a long form story that everybody has a little piece in. You know, it's like a bunch of cooks getting together and making a really big cake. So for me, it was just a wonderful opportunity.
Was this something that was already percolating in your head, or did you come up with it explicitly for a Grifter Song?
So I came up with the idea specifically for a Grifter Song, but some of the scenes are scenes that are tropes that I like. Like toward the end when they're riding away on a horse. When they're having a shootout or whatnot. Certain tropes in there and certain cliches are stuff that I love. I don't think tropes and cliches are bad if you can put a fresh spin on them. So the idea was original, but some of the scenes were stuff that I just like to do.
Was it difficult to work with, like, guidelines? Like, there's a rule book you got handed that everybody had to play within. Hey, this is the gridiron. Stay in bounds or we throw the flag, you know. Was that difficult, or did you enjoy it, or how was it for you?
Nah, for me, I come from a really blue-collar background, so if somebody tells you this is how you got to do the job, then you do the job as well as you can. For me, I felt like I was just honored to come into somebody else's house and cook in their kitchen. You know, it was an honor for me, so...
That's a good analogy. Was there anything about Sam and Rachel that you found really interesting or that you were excited to write about or that you wanted to explore?
I love their love. I love that no matter what they've gone through, no matter what they do, they never turn on each other. It's sort of a juxtaposition of the usual noir trope. And it's just this idea that, no, this man and this woman, these people have found each other and they're willing to go to the end of their earth for each other. I thought that was really, to me, really moving.
I'm glad that came through, and I'm certainly glad you explored it. Well, it's probably a spoiler, so you might have to pick your second favorite moment, but was there a favorite moment in the story for you?
My favorite moment in the story, and it's a little bit of a spoiler, the part of the plot is that somebody's trying to sell some championship thoroughbred horse racing sperm. I love the scene when the actual deal goes down, and that's all I'll say.
Have you read any of the other episodes? And if you have, any of those stand out to you as personal favorites?
So James D.F. Hanna's one, and I forget the title, but that was really good. And Curtis at Bolito's, both of those are the ones that really stood out to me.
Yeah, yeah. Curtis wrote the previous episode to the end, so he provided a nice springboard to get to the end. Speaking of which, the end, like, you spent some time with Sam and Rachel, got to know them. You've read some of the other stories, so you know them even more. If I handed you the reins and said, take this wagon into the barn, how would you end the entire series? And I guess, if you want, how do you think it'll end?
I know me, the way I would end it, they'd probably go out in a blaze of glory. However, I hope, and I haven't read it, I hope they make it. I really do. There's something just endearing about the two of them and the way they care for each other. And I'm usually a very nihilistic, pessimistic writer. Anybody who reads my books knows that. But something about them, I want these crazy kids to make it out.
Well, if anybody listening hasn't heard of you, they've been living under a rock the last couple of years. But for those under a rock dweller folks, what is your most recent release or what's coming up next? And where can people find out more about you?
So my most recent release is All the Sinners Bleed, New York Times bestseller, was on Barack Obama's summer reading list. I'm currently working on a crime novel entitled King of Ashes, and you can reach me on social media. Literally at this point, just Google me and send me a DM.
All right. Well, Sean, you had a great episode, and one of the most iconic images from the series at the end there. I really appreciate you doing that, and thanks for being part of this podcast retrospective as well.
Man, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
All right. Thank you, Sean, for your thoughts on Ride Like Hell. Great title. And as you've probably heard and will hear throughout this series, this was one of the books, much like Holly West's, that was frequently cited by other grifters as their favorite entry in the series. So there you go, folks. Episodes 18, 19, and 20 of A Grifter Song. Rocky Mountain Lie by Michael Poole, Open Up Your Heart by Carmen Yaramillo, and Ride Like Hell by S.A. Cosby. In the next episode, we'll review 21, 22, and 23. That's The Alpha Whisperer, book 21, which I wrote, Dracula Wine, book 22 by David Housewright, and book 23, Diamond Dogs by Gabriel Valjean. If you're listening to these as they drop, that'll be tomorrow. I'd like to say thanks to Carmen and Sean for being interviewed for this, and to you, the listener, for following along with this retrospective. We will be back next episode with books 21, 22, and 23. Until then, this is Frank Zaffiro reminding you that sometimes you gotta be in the wrong place to write crime.